It's Friday, August 21st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. More good news in the world of Normal. Yesterday, I announced the official recognition of Normal, Nebraska, and today I get to announce the official recognition of Milwaukee Normal in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Good job, guys, and keep fighting for an end to adult marijuana prohibition. Also, I'm able to confirm the participation of mixed martial artist Toby Greer for the NormalCon 2009 in San Francisco, September 24th through 26th. He'll be on a panel on Saturday the 26th called Cannabis and Athleticism, and he's going to be discussing his fight to get the California State Athletic Commission to allow him to fight in the state of California even though he uses medical marijuana. Currently, the Athletic Commission bans any fighters who use prohibited substances, and medical marijuana is one of those. We'll also get Toby on the show one of these days, either on the podcast or, my hope, on the debut of Normal Show Live on Labor Day weekend. Plenty of things happening this weekend in the world of Normal. North Ohio Normal wants to let you know about Water Bands Waterfest taking place today and tomorrow at Nelson Ledges Quarry Park. Kansas City Normal wants to let you know about Greenfest at the Uptown Theater on the 22nd and 23rd. Kelly Maddie from Joplin Normal is making some appearances on KQYX 1450 AM radio on Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, Oregon Normal has their medical marijuana cardholders meeting at the Village Ballroom. You do have to be a medical marijuana patient to attend. On Sunday, there is a book launch for the Marijuana is Safer book. This will be at the Eight Rivers Lodo in Denver, Colorado, and Mile High Normal wants you to know all about that. And from the national office, our founder, Keith Strop, will be interviewing author John McCaslin on C-SPAN's Book TV. It's a one-hour interview that'll appear on Saturday the 22nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's about the book Weed Man, which is a biography about Jimmy Devine, one of America's most prolific cannabis smugglers. It will be rebroadcast on Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and then later that night in the wee early hours of Monday at midnight Eastern and 3 a.m. Eastern. So catch that interview if you can. It's a Normal shout-out. Well, with the formation of Normal Nebraska, that's one more state down in my 50-state strategy to spread Normal chapters all across this country. So currently, we only have 11 states and the District of Columbia that are lacking a Normal chapter. So let's give shout-outs to all of those states. Now, I've already done some preliminary work in Alabama, so we may have some chapters starting up there pretty soon. I met with the folks in southwestern Idaho. They should be forming a chapter really soon. And for the folks in the Northern Virginia District of Columbia area, I'll be visiting in September and hoping to get a chapter formed with them. Other states in the Northeast include Rhode Island and New Hampshire and Connecticut. We want to get Connecticut back online as a chapter following that unfortunate incident earlier this year. In the Great American South, we want to add Mississippi to the list of states. So anyone in Mississippi who's interested in getting involved with Normal, give me a call. Rhode Island still needs a Normal chapter. North Dakota, Kentucky, Delaware, and Alaska. So those are the states where we're looking to form Normal chapters. If you want to get involved, just send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and the New York Times proclaiming that Mexico has legalized marijuana possession. Not exactly. We'll explain in the details. Also, a new study is out that shows that the use of marijuana by binge-drinking teenagers tends to protect their brains from the damage of the binge drinking. Very interesting study there. And another raid in Los Angeles, where the Los Angeles Police Department have raided the Royal Temple of Zion in Echo Park. This is the temple of Pastor Craig X. Rubin, the man who was offering a free eighth of marijuana a couple weeks ago for people to come testify in L.A., and he's claiming a religious use exemption. We'll take a look at that with my commentary at the end. It's the third Friday of the month, so we're going to get our celebrity entertainment report from Steve Bloom, who has an exclusive interview with John Davis from the Seattle Hemp Fest and an exclusive reply from Dominic Holden regarding their controversy over Holden being kicked out of Seattle Hemp Fest for what he wrote in the Seattle Stranger. Also, a look at the 40th anniversary of Woodstock. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got It's a Rap Friday, featuring the Grammy-winning group Bone Thugs and Harmony with their song called The Weed Song. And in our Cannabis Community segment, we go to a live recording with Jim Miller, Chris Goldstein, and Ken Wolski, who were at the trial of John Wilson, a multiple sclerosis patient in New Jersey who's facing 20 years for growing 17 plants for medical purposes. All of that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Mexico decriminalizes personal possession of marijuana. From the Spokane Spokesman Review, Mexico City. Mexico enacted a controversial law Thursday decriminalizing possession of small amounts of marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and other drugs while encouraging free government treatment for drug dependency. The law sets out maximum personal use amounts for drugs, also including LSD and methamphetamine. People detained with those quantities will no longer face criminal prosecution when the law goes into effect today. Anyone caught with drug amounts under the personal use limit will be encouraged to seek treatment, and for those caught a third time, treatment is mandatory, although the law does not specify penalties for non-compliance. In 2006, the U.S. government publicly criticized a similar bill. Then-President Vicente Fox sent that law, which did not have a mandatory treatment provision, back to Congress for reconsideration. The maximum amount of marijuana considered to be for personal use under the new law is 5 grams, the equivalent of about 4 joints. The limit is a half a gram for cocaine, the equivalent of about 4 lines. For other drugs, the limits are 50 milligrams of heroin, 40 milligrams for methamphetamine, and 0.015 milligrams for LSD. Mexico has emphasized the need to differentiate drug addicts and casual users from the violent traffickers whose turf battles have contributed to the deaths of more than 11,000 people during Calderón's term. In the face of growing domestic drug use, Mexico has increased its focus on prevention and drug treatment. Funny how assassinations of federal officials and piles of bodies in the public square will move your focus away from your average pot smoker, isn't it? As it was, Mexico didn't really punish people caught with personal amounts anyway. A suspect could always claim he was an addict and the amount he possessed was for personal use. However, the law never established what amounts counted as personal, and this loophole allowed corrupt cops and judges to seek bribes from average users in order to get their amounts declared personal. Marijuana may protect brain from binge drinking. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Researchers from the University of California, San Diego used high-tech scans to compare microscopic changes in brain white matter in teens aged 16 to 19 who were divided into three groups. Binge drinkers, or boys who consume five or more drinks at one sitting, and girls who have four or more drinks, binge drinkers who also smoked marijuana, and a control group with little or no experience with either alcohol or drugs. As expected, the binge drinkers showed signs of white matter damage in all eight brain regions examined by the researchers. But the binge drinkers slash marijuana users had less damage in seven out of the eight brain regions than the binge drinkers did. And compared to the control group, the binge drinkers slash marijuana users had more white matter damage in only three regions. The researchers wrote that brain white matter tracts were, quote, more coherent in adolescents who binge drink and use marijuana than in adolescents who report only binge drinking, end quote. They said it's, quote, possible that marijuana may have some neuroprotective properties in mitigating alcohol-related oxidative stress or excitotoxic cell death, end quote. So, naturally, when these 16 to 19-year-olds graduate and go to college, we immerse them in an alcohol-saturated party culture and forbid them from using cannabis. It is illegal for them to be using either drug, so we provide slap-on-the-wrist penalties for the alcohol use, but kick them out of their dorms, surrender their college aid, require random urine screening, and saddle them with a criminal drug record that makes the top careers and positions all but impossible to attain. Because we want to protect the children. Third LA area raid, Royal Temple of Zion in Echo Park. Echo Park, California, KABC. For the third time in a week, the Los Angeles Police Department has raided a medical marijuana facility. Police arrested three people during the raid Thursday night at the Royal Temple of Zion in Echo Park. Authorities say the facility has not applied for a hardship permit like all the other medical marijuana dispensaries, so selling the marijuana is illegal. About 2 pounds of marijuana were seized.
Oh my gosh! A whole 2 pounds of marijuana?
Here in Oregon, that's two-thirds the amount of medical marijuana two registered patients may possess. Even at ridiculously inflated, black market-dictated California dispensary prices, that's less than $10,000 worth of marijuana. I wonder how much it costs the city of Los Angeles to execute and prosecute such a raid. Wanna bet it's more than $10,000? Those associated with the temple say it is a Rastafarian ministry and has the legal right to sell marijuana to the sick. Quote, "This is a church-run medical marijuana club providing medical marijuana for sick people, but we do it as a church," end quote, said Pastor Craig Rubin. Pastor Rubin believes police are targeting those that have been vocal about legalizing the drug. Pastor Rubin, as you may remember, is the man who was offering patients a free 1/8 ounce of marijuana if they would come testify at the L.A. Plum hearings 2 weeks ago. Quote, "They seem to be particularly picking out people who have applied for these hardships who speak out," end quote, said Pastor Rubin. Members say because this is a place of worship, they have not done anything illegal. Quote, It's because we believe a cannabis from Revelations 22 is a plant for the healing of all nations and that people should have access to this plant. It's not only benign, it's benevolent, end quote, said Pastor Rubin. Yes, and I believe the flying spaghetti monster brought forth cannabis from his noodly appendages to give to humanity so they may savor his succulent meatballs, so I shouldn't be arrested for my pot smoking either. Sorry, I know many of you listening to this have sincere religious beliefs, and some have sincere beliefs that treat ganja as a sacrament. But as an atheist, I continue to be offended by the notion that because I treat all books as written works of men, not gods, I deserve to be arrested and jailed for my use of cannabis. I completely support the right of religious folks to use ganja because I completely support the inalienable right of all folks to use ganja. But when religious folks think they have a special and unique right to not be arrested for cannabis because they picked the right god, they are discriminating against me for my lack of a god. Religion is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. We don't let certain religious folks get away with abusively beating their kids because some book says, quote, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him," end quote. We don't let certain religious folks get away with marrying 10 virgin brides because some book says, quote, "And if he have 10 virgins given unto him by this law, he cannot commit adultery, for they belong to him, and they are given unto him, therefore he is justified," end quote. We don't let certain religious folks get away with murdering people because some book says, quote, "And kill them wherever you find them, and drive them out from whence they drove you out, and persecution is severer than slaughter. And do not fight with them at the sacred mosques until they fight with you in it. But if they do fight you, then slay them. Such is the recompense of the unbelievers," end quote. Yes, we do have a First Amendment that prohibits Congress from enacting laws suppressing religion, but that is tempered by the compelling interest of the state in maintaining secular law. To date, that has meant certain religions get to use Schedule I ayahuasca tea and peyote, but not cannabis. Arrowid.com. First, it is important to understand a little about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. In 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court changed the legal standard by which First Amendment religious cases were decided with regard to, quote, "laws of general applicability," end quote. For laws that apply generally and are not intended to ban a particular religious practice, there are constitutional questions about what the U.S. government can and can't do. Just because someone claims that their religion requires that they drive faster than the speed limits, the generally applicable laws regarding traffic safety still apply to those members of the fanciful 100-mile-per-hour church. From the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, government may substantially burden a person's exercise of religion only if it determines that application of the burden to the person, one, is in furtherance of a compelling governmental interest, and two, is the least restrictive means of furthering that compelling governmental interest. While the RFRA tests have not been applied at the Supreme Court level, they were considered in a Hawaii case in which the state Supreme Court rejected the appellant's claim that his religious use of cannabis was protected under RFRA and the First Amendment. Hawaii, State v. Sunderland. The government's ability to enforce generally applicable prohibitions of socially harmful conduct, like its ability to carry out other aspects of public policy, quote, cannot depend on measuring the effects of a governmental action on a religious objector's spiritual development, end quote. To make an individual's obligation to obey such a law contingent upon the law's coincidence with his religious beliefs, except where the state's interest is compelling, permitting him by virtue of his beliefs to become a law unto himself, contradicts both constitutional tradition and common sense. The closest the federal courts have come to ruling on this is the Guerrero case in the Ninth Circuit out of Guam, but the court had only to address Guerrero's importation of marijuana, not his religious use of it. Cognitive liberty. After litigating the case for more than 10 years, the Ninth Circuit ruled on Tuesday that while the Religious Freedom Restoration Act might protect some Rastafarians who possess or smoke marijuana as part of their religious practices, it does not protect the importation of marijuana, even if that marijuana was intended for religious use. According to the Ninth Circuit, while the practice of Rastafarianism sanctions the smoking of marijuana, nowhere does the religion sanction the importation of marijuana. Basically, the government's argument is that ayahuasca and peyote are used by so few, both religiously and recreationally, that letting a few First Peoples use them religiously doesn't substantially burden the government from stopping others from using them recreationally. But cannabis use is so prevalent that the minute you let some people use it religiously, everybody who uses it recreationally will suddenly find religion. And that substantially burdens the government from keeping people from using cannabis recreationally. In other words, Rastafarians are punished for their god picking too popular a sacrament.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service moment.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. Well, we've reached the third Friday of the month, and that means it's time for a CelebStoner.com entertainment report with Steve Bloom from New York City. Steve, welcome back.
Hey, Russ. Okay, it's the third Friday. No, I'll have to be prepared on third Friday.
Every other Friday, first and thirds.
Okay.
So, of course, the big story this weekend was the Seattle Hemp Fest and the controversy that kind of brewed over here from comments by both Dominic Holden in the Stranger magazine up in Seattle, as well as Eric Sterling on his blog. He was a former Hemp Fest speaker as well. This is kind of something you and I go back with, because I remember in the 2008 Hemp Fest, we were on a panel together and kind of had this discussion as well about the place of hemp fests and so-called hippies in the movement and so on. And you got an exclusive interview with John Davis there too from Hemp Fest, and I thought maybe that's something we could discuss today.
Yeah, well, it follows for, you know, certainly the last year at Celeb Stoner, you know, the strange saga of Dominic Holden, who was, you know, one of the leading activists on the West Coast scene going back into the 90s and helped found the Hemp Fest and was the director of the Hemp Fest. And Dominic left in 2004, and he left the Hemp Fest organization, but he was sort of loosely connected to it for the next couple of years. And then he got a gig doing blogging with The Stranger, which is a weekly in Seattle. And using his blog, he's spent a lot of energy going after Hemp Fest and kind of attacking Hemp Fest over the last couple of years, you know, with sarcastic comments. And his main point is that Hemp Fest, he calls it, is regressive and archaic, and is kind of a reserved for a crowd mostly made up of hippies, which he calls the patchouli-stained ghetto.
Yeah.
So all these comments have just irritated, you know, those of us who perhaps might utilize patchouli. Honestly, I don't understand the whole patchouli thing.
I don't either.
I've never used patchouli once in my life. But nevertheless, that's the stereotype that every hippie, you know, for some reason loves patchouli. And so things sort of came into kind of exploded at HempFest this year because Dominic, you know, wrote several articles before HempFest, making some of his comments, you know, what HempFest needs to do. He really is against tie dyes being anywhere on site. Certainly should not be on stage. You know, there has to be a different approach, and you know, HempFest has to change. Well, I'm not really sure, but he feels he doesn't like the crowd. Plus, Dominic is openly gay, and apparently he and some of his gay friends just don't like the crowd that comes to HempFest. They just think it's either a tough crowd, or it's just too hippie, or it's just not cute enough, or whatever it is that he doesn't like about the people who are there. And he makes a lot of fun of the people who go. So as last year you mentioned, you know, we had a panel discussion, which I was on. You led the panel, and, you know, Dominic and I went back and forth on the issue of dirty hippies, which I was offended by, you know, any sort of comment of that sort. And, but that was just typical of Dominic's campaign. So this year, he was doing similar, poking away at HempFest, leading up to HempFest, and this time they decided, well, you know, they're not going to be so friendly to Dominic this year. Last year they let him speak. This year he wasn't going to be allowed to speak. This year wasn't even going to be allowed to go into the backstage area and just hang out with people. And lo and behold, he was backstage at one point on Sunday, and John Davis from HempFest saw him there and basically asked him to leave. John says he wasn't escorted out. Dominic says he was. It wasn't a confrontation. They didn't have to grab him or whatever, but it was pretty much like, hey, you don't belong here. Get out. We don't like you anymore. And so Dominic, of course, wrote about that in his blog the next day, saying, hey, I got kicked out of HempFest. And he was almost like, oh, wow, I'm really shocked. You know, I didn't really expect that to happen. And then I asked John Davis, you know, to sort of fill me in on what happened there, because I wasn't at HempFest this year. And he gave a long explanation, which we published at Celeb Stoner. And then Dominic saw this published, and he got kind of annoyed at me and at Celeb Stoner for not giving him an opportunity to have his say. And, you know, really I was just offering HempFest the first say, you know, what happened, because they were the ones who sort of let him out or asked him to leave. You know, what's the problem from their point of view? Because we've already heard his point of view countless times. So then as Dominic responded, he sent me, you know, a point-by-point kind of rebuttal. So we posted that as well, you know, in fairness to Dominic. And then, you know, you make sense of it yourself. And then you read some of the comments. And, you know, there's not too many people who are on Dominic's side. But one thing that people don't like, and I found some people in the media, was that the HempFest decided to who is what they call vetted media, and they decided that the Stranger and Dominic are not vetted media, so therefore they can't be in places that other media might be allowed, such as yourself or myself or other members of the media. So some media people don't like that he was sort of pointed out, like, I mean, how could the Stranger not be a vetted media? They're important media in Seattle, whether you like them or not or what they say or not. Usually the Stranger's pretty cool, to be honest. Dan Savage at the top, also very openly gay. And, you know, Dan's been on Bill Maher many times. So you would think that the Stranger, you know, would be vetted. But I think HempFest was just fed up. You know, they've had it with Dominic. They've had it with, you know, the Stranger via Dominic attacking. It's like, hey, you know, take the year off. So more or less that's the case. But I think it kind of came to a head. And then, you know, I don't know what will happen from this point on. But, you know, sort of as far as I know, that's what went down in Seattle this weekend.
You know, I've said a few of those things that Dominic said in the past about, you know, needing to clean up our image or dress up a little bit for stuff. But I've kind of come to realize that HempFest is more like a cultural thing. It's more of a cultural celebration. And, you know, there's a certain bigotry to, you know, calling out so-called dirty, stinky hippies and stuff. It's really not, I don't think it's appropriate anymore. And I've kind of come around a little bit to celebrating that ethic. So it's an interesting topic, and I'm glad you're covering it as well and giving Dominic a chance to respond. I'll direct everyone to check that out. Now, some other stuff that we've got going on, speaking of festivals, it's the 40th anniversary last weekend of the Woodstock Festival, and there's some new movies now out about that.
Well, it is Woodstock weekend last weekend, and it's kind of, let's just say, the 40th anniversary of Woodstock is being celebrated throughout this month. And the movie Ticking Woodstock is opening next Friday, which is Ang Lee, who did Brokeback Mountain, his sort of take on the Woodstock experience. It's a story of Elliot Tybor, who was the son of a family that had a little hotel in the Catskills area where the Woodstock took place. And people know the story a little bit about Woodstock. They originally planned to have it in Saugerties, New York, which is about 2.5 hours north of New York City. And they lost their permit within, say, you know, 2 weeks or so of the events being scheduled. So they're looking for another location, and they ended up moving the festival west to Bethel, which is about 20 miles west of Woodstock. So though it retains the name Woodstock, it didn't take place in Woodstock, you know, nearby, but not quite in Woodstock. And so Elliot, apparently, according to the story of the movie and the book that he wrote, he offered the Woodstock Ventures people, sort of land that he had access to, or permit of a land that he had nearby that he had access to say, hey, you could have it here. And then introduced, the Woodstock people to Max Yasger, who famously was, you know, the farmer who, you know, the biggest, amount of people ended up camping out on his, Max Yasger's farm. So that tells that story. It's kind of an interesting story. Dimitri Martin is the lead actor, you know, the comedian Dimitri Martin. And it's kind of an interesting, you know, selection for him because he's not really a well-known actor. It's a difficult subject to bring to the screen. It's already been done in a movie called A Walk on the Moon, set in 1969. You know, people kind of in the area, you know, being influenced by the Woodstock event and wanting to go, and then, you know, splitting families apart, and, you know, kind of the transformation that was kind of happening in society around that time. You kind of look at it through these movies, and it kind of runs through this movie as well. It's kind of hard to do Woodstock because they don't really show you any live music, and it's just a big crowd of people having fun with music in the background. You don't feel like you're there, but Ang Lee has given it a good try, let's just say. In the meantime, the 40th anniversary was celebrated last weekend up at Bethel at the Performing Arts Center, which is now called Bethel Woods, which is what they built on the site of the original Woodstock, you know, farm and location where they actually had the event. And so I'd never been up to that Performing Arts Center, which was built around 5 years ago. I wanted to see it. And, you know, it's just another Performing Arts Center that happens to be on a famous location. I do have my reservations about building on that so-called sacred site. I mean, there is, like, next door to where the main performing arts facility is really where the original stage was, so they didn't really quite build on the stage site, but nearby, because it's like a hill and dale there. You're kind of rolling hills. And so the concert was a long concert featuring kind of what's left of the Woodstock musical experience. You know, so many musical performers from Woodstock, you know, they passed away. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, people like that. Or there's, you know, one member left in groups. So, for instance, Jefferson Starship with Paul Kantner, which was very much a fun group because they had members of Quicksilver Messenger Service and Big Brother and the Holding Company all sort of playing together in a kind of a San Francisco-style jam, which was a lot of fun at the concert. But, for instance, a band like 10 Years After, which I was a big fan of, and they were great at Woodstock with their famous I'm Coming Home, you know, sizzling blues song that they did. Alvin Lee, the famous guitar player, is no longer in the group. So there you have, like, the original guys, but not including Alvin Lee and some young guy playing his part. So you get a lot of that. But I guess, you know, those of us who, you know, go to dead shows now, you're used to sort of like a little bit of like half and half. Jerry Garcia is not around anymore, so Warren Haynes fills that role. But you have two other guys, or one other guy, or Phil Lesh, or Bob Weir, or whoever the guys, you know, the drummers, Mickey Hart, Bill Kreutzmann, and they sort of make up the band. And that's what you sort of saw a lot of at this Woodstock concert, you know, what's left of a lot of these bands. Although it didn't include people like Joe Cocker or, say, Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young, or Joan Baez, who probably would have made it a little bit more of an interesting Heroes of Woodstock package, but those names are a little too big. So it was 10 Years After, Canned Heat, Mountain, really a very good band that played there and is famous in that area. Levon Helm, who was one of the, you know, members of the band, he has a great group, and they finished up the show at 1 in the morning. It was really a marathon. It started at 5:30 and went to 1 in the morning. So, but, you know, you kind of look around, you go, well, there's no camping, you know, it's just kind of like people drinking Budweiser, no brown acid, free love. You just don't really feel like you were there, you know. 40 years later, something seemed to be really missing. And just to add is that there was no 40th anniversary celebration this year in a big way like there was for the 25th and the 30th, as, of course, you know, you would remember that the one in 1999 was the event in upstate New York, farther upstate at an Air Force base that, you know, went up in smoke with riots and fires and burning and looting, and kind of sort of ended this sort of Woodstock ideal in a sense that you could kind of keep repeating this thing. But I did go to the 1994 event, and I did not go to the original Woodstock because I was too young. But the 1994 event was a lot of fun, and I had a great time. It was very similar to the original event with rain and mud and all kinds of good stuff. But they wouldn't really, nobody would get behind Michael Lang this year, who is the founder, one of the four main guys who started the whole Woodstock thing, to do a 40th anniversary because of how badly the 30th anniversary went. Nobody would take a chance. And even Michael Lang had said, and it was, you know, sort of a little bit of a dream, that he wanted to have this free concert in Prospect Park, which is near where I live here in Brooklyn, New York, and they have a big long meadow, and he envisioned, you know, hundreds of thousands of people for free at a great Woodstock, you know, reunion. Didn't happen. Nobody would pony up the sponsor money. The city of New York, I don't think, really was that into it. And, you know, things just, nothing really happened. So it's kind of fizzled this year, even though there's lots of stuff going on with the re-releases of the DVD of the movie and CD packages and books and the Taking Woodstock movie. Nothing really happened this year. So the one little kernel of, like, excitement was to go up to Bethel for that 40th anniversary, which I did. And, you know, it was a fun show, but it was definitely nowhere near, you know, the excitement of a real, you know, full-blown festival.
Well, before we let you go, I want to find out what the latest is on your Stoner movie book.
Working feverishly, actually, watching a lot of movies. It's Reefer Movie Madness, the ultimate Stoner film guide, coming out next April. Just watching a lot of movies. We sort of plowed through the comedy section. Now we're into the drama section, a little more serious. I watched Apocalypse Now last night. You know, a lot of the movies are movies I've seen before, but some of the movies are movies I've never seen. And you sort of learn something new, or you kind of reassess. So, and in the case of Apocalypse Now, you know, you're not just watching the original. Now you watch the long version with the extra hour built into it called the redo. So there's so much there to, you know, dig into. So working really hard on that, you know, just moving along. And I'm looking forward to seeing, I think, are you coming east for the Boston Freedom?
Yep, I'll be at Boston, yep.
All right, looking forward to seeing you for that. And, of course, this is a normal conference. So September is a lot of activities.
Yeah, now when do you expect the book to come out?
Next 420, in the 420 cycle.
Check that out and have everyone check out celebstoner.com for the latest news on celebrities and cannabis. Thanks for joining us again, Steve.
Thanks,
just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. For It's a Rap Friday, we hear from hip-hop legends Bone Thugs and Harmony with their song, The Weed Song, which was nominated in 2007's Marijuana Music Awards. Bone Thugs and Harmony are best known for their fast-paced rapping style and harmonizing vocals. Since the band's formation in the early 1990s, Bone Thugs and Harmony have received numerous awards, including a Grammy Award for Best Rap Performance in 1997. The group worked with icons such as Eazy-E and Tupac and are recognized as one of the most successful hip-hop groups, having sold 50 million records. For the latest about legendary Bone Thugs and Harmony, check out myspace.com/BoneThugsAndHarmony. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's The Weed Song by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Hiya, hiya, baby. Can you feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it? Do you feel the same weed high that I found so high? We can make you feel that way. So right. Roll more, let's smoke. Yeah. I got to get high. I've been high since the last song. Just been smoking and smoking. Smoke another blunt, roll another up. You know that we can really ease your mind. Every time I smoke a reefer, that indoor high makes me fly. If everybody smoked a blunt, relieve the mind, the world could be a better place. If everybody took a break and we all just get wasted. Smoked out, down, down. Smoked out, down. Choked out, down. Pull another Let's get
the trees, it can make me feel better. And every day I wake, nigga, rolling up blunts and more blunts and more blunts. And I keep a case of Swiss and sweets in a truck truck. When I'm rolling, smoking, choking, just floating through the city in a drop top, Glock cock rolling, just rolling. Me and Mary Jane, that's my world, that's my thing. The way she penetrates my brain, booted and bless me with gang. Good gang, you wanna chop it up? We can kick it, smoke a fatty to the dome. Nigga lay high, thug down, smoking all night long.
The weekend get no better. No better. The weekend get no better. No better. The weekend get no better.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, the Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normalnorml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty, but we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experiences of our cannabis community.
We go out live now to Somerset, New Jersey, where we have Jim Miller from the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey. He's the co-founder, and he's at a very important trial in New Jersey. This concerns a multiple sclerosis patient named John Wilson, who was caught growing 17 plants for his medical use. And we've got all sorts of shocking details to relay in this story. So first of all, Jim, thank you for joining us here on The Stash.
All right, thanks, Russ. I'm glad to be talking to you.
Okay, so John Wilson, multiple sclerosis patient, caught growing 17 plants. None of that's in dispute here. Tell our listeners about the restrictions that the court has placed on him in this trial.
Well, John, as you say, does not dispute that he had 17 marijuana plants growing. He was very open about the fact that he used it to treat his multiple sclerosis. And the judge has ruled that John may not say that he used the marijuana medically at trial. And unbelievably, the judge also ruled that John may not even mention that he has MS.
Wow.
John's ambulatory. You're not going to know that he's sick to look at him, but believe me, MS, he has it and he's not well.
Wow.
So the prosecution says that they don't want the jury to be sympathetic. There is reason to be sympathetic. It's called the justice system for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's not going to act like that. John's not going to get a fair trial.
Yeah.
He's not allowed.
That you know, we've heard of this before where the judges in federal trials won't let people mention the words medical marijuana or indicate that the marijuana is for medical purposes. But this has got to be the first time I've ever heard of a patient being forbidden from mentioning his own medical condition.
Well, ironically enough, upon thinking about it, I realized in one respect over the last 17 years, I've probably done a pretty good job of making sure that people know that multiple sclerosis symptoms can be relieved by marijuana use. Maybe it's to the point now that pretty much everybody knows that if you have MS, marijuana may help you. So I think by virtue of the fact that it is a well-known fact now, the prosecution's worried that if they knew he had MS in particular, they might know what the marijuana was used for, and they don't want them to know that. They don't want them to know the truth, is the ironic part. So we are here to make sure that even if the jury can find out, everybody else is going to know that we can possibly let know.
Well, this sounds awful. It's almost as if John Wilson is in trouble for being a little too healthy here.
That's exactly right. If he were in a wheelchair, they wouldn't be able to hide the fact that he's sick. So if he was sicker, they would at least know that he's not well and maybe figure this out. If he was not as sick, he might not need marijuana to relieve his symptoms. He's just the right kind of sick for being in an incredible amount of trouble.
Mm.
And as I was saying earlier today, what I find totally egregious is that the same judge that says, John, you may not say that you have MS, you may not say you use marijuana to treat your symptoms, is going to have him put his left hand on the Bible, raise his right hand, and have him say that I do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. John can tell the truth, and he will tell nothing but the truth, but he may not tell the whole truth. So the judge is basically asking him to lie to God.
Yeah, this is an awful precedent, and I can't imagine, you know, if this precedent is set, you know, how will this go forward with future trials involving medical use of marijuana when the person is in a wheelchair?
Right. Yeah, this is Yeah, I tell you, it takes my breath away sometimes. This affects me more than anything has in years. And I don't know if it's, you know, because I watched my late wife suffer with MS before she died 6 years ago, or it's just that he is sick, and I see the justice system in a way I've never seen it before. I know it doesn't always work, but you like to hope somebody tries to make it work. When my late wife Cheryl ate marijuana in a congressman's office in 1998, state attorney's office declined to prosecute. They have that discretion. So that's what we're saying here, is the state attorney general of New Jersey has the same prosecutorial discretion. Mm-hmm. They don't have to go forward with this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping by our showing up, they know it's not going to go quietly, and they may reconsider whether or not to put him on trial, and they can't even be made to say why. You'd have to go to court to get them to say why. So we want to let them know it's not too late now. There still is a choice. They don't have to go forward.
What kind of sentence would Mr. Wilson be facing here if he was convicted?
Facing 20 years.
Wow.
Facing 20 years because here in New Jersey, anything over 10 plants is manufacturing with intent to distribute. And as you know, there's all sorts of peripheral charges that they do like to charge you with so they can drop some if they go for a plea bargain. And John rightfully feels that going to prison would not only exacerbate his condition, that a 20-year sentence for him would be a death sentence.
Yeah.
And as we saw with Ed Rosenthal in California, when the jury finds out that they didn't have the whole truth, they're livid. They feel they've been used. And that's what's going to happen here. They're going to find a jury they can use. The prosecution's intent here is to fool the jury into thinking something that's not true. That is all they're trying to do. That's the bottom line. And legally, they can get away with it.
Yeah.
But this time they're not going to get away with it quietly. We had some pretty good media coverage here, surprisingly good. And we're hoping that should they go forward, they know that John's going to be extremely well represented at any trial they could have anywhere in the state.
Do you feel that this prosecution may be somewhat political retaliation for the effort to try to get medical marijuana in New Jersey?
Yeah, well, that's occurred to me, and actually I kind of hope that they are tied into that, because then they're going to realize that if they go forward, they're going to be the best thing that ever happened to medical marijuana in New Jersey, and I say that with a heavy heart. I'm sorry for John, but it's just like Cheryl's disability was so severe that it helped medical marijuana in New Jersey. Of course, I didn't wish it was severe, and I wasn't happy. I'm not happy about John's plight, but the fact is, the prosecution goes forward, they are going to be the best thing that ever happened for medical marijuana here, because everybody's going to know this is it, enough is enough. So if they are players behind the scenes, they may want to make an offer that he can't refuse, where he doesn't have to go to prison, and make it go away quietly.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to encourage everyone to check out cmmnj.org and to mark that date on your calendar, September 25th. If you're in that Somerset, New Jersey area, turn out, bring a sign, make some noise. We can't let this injustice stand. This is ridiculous to not let a multiple sclerosis patient admit that they have multiple sclerosis. It's just amazing to me.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim Miller, the co-founder of CMMNJ. We appreciate you joining us here on The Stash.
All right. Thanks a lot, Russ.
Thank you. All right. We turn the phone over now to Chris Goldstein, the executive director of Normal New Jersey, who's also there in Somerset. And Chris, welcome back to The Stash.
Oh, thank you, Russ. It's a hot day out here. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. And I just wanted to get some of your reactions to this John Wilson trial. And where do you think we go from here?
Well, Russ, this is just a particularly egregious case. In 10 years of covering medical marijuana and marijuana reform, I don't think I've ever seen a judge cite pending state legislation from the bench and have an attorney general's office zealously prosecute a patient in this way. Funny thing about this case, Russ, is that the New Jersey Attorney General, Ann Milgram, issued recommendations to pass our medical marijuana bill. And John, unfortunately, is being prosecuted by the very same office. It's not the local prosecutor who is trying this case, but the state attorney general's office. Because John's plants were spotted by the National Guard helicopter, and then the state police marijuana eradication unit duly eradicated his 17 plants. So it is pretty confusing. I would say that the attorney general's office knowledge of the medical marijuana bill is allowing them to so aggressively prosecute John. And my take on it is really, I work on this as a social justice issue. No better illustration of what's happening than right here today with John Ray Wilson.
Yeah, you mentioned them citing this legislation from the bench. What are they gaining from knowing the pending medical marijuana law in this case?
Well, in New Jersey, there's an unfortunate thing. They have a special law that they use against people who are caught cultivating marijuana. It's called operating a drug manufacturing facility. And the rules with that law included marijuana on the back end. They passed the law originally for cocaine and heroin, and they add marijuana later. They can prosecute you under that if you have been proven to be manufacturing drugs on your property for more than one day. And as we all know, it takes more than one day to grow marijuana. So pretty much anyone who is caught cultivating marijuana is charged with operating a drug manufacturing facility for distribution. Now, you can get rid of that by arguing that the plants were for your personal use. And there are cases in New Jersey where patients have argued up to 400 plants for personal use, and that has been upheld by judges. But in this case, the prosecutor said in the courtroom that if we let the jury know that he was growing it for personal use and he was growing it personally to treat his MS, then the jury might nullify the verdict. And thus, he cannot tell the jury that he has MS and that he was growing for personal use. And that is why that is the strangest twist and turn in a medical marijuana case I've ever seen, certainly here on the East Coast. It heartens back to what happened to Ed Rosenthal years ago, where they were not allowed to tell the jury that he was growing for medical use, and then he was convicted, and the jury came back and were not happy with not being fully informed. That is what's happening here in New Jersey right now.
So basically they're saying that we can't let him tell the truth because then he might win.
Exactly. And that tactic by the Attorney General's office comes again with this knowledge of the medical marijuana bill. If they weren't so well schooled with the Compassionate Use Act, they might not be able to make such arguments to the judge.
Well, it's an amazing and shocking case, and we'll keep following it here on the Stash. I know you'll be on top of this over in New Jersey as well. Any other resources that we should point our listeners to? I've given them the CMMNJ website. Are there phone numbers or ways they can donate money to help the fund for John Wilson?
Well, the best way is right up there on CMMNJ.org. We've worked with the Wilson family at the Coalition to make sure that that PayPal link, it doesn't come to us, it goes right to the Wilson family. John's out on bail right now, and of course the case is eating up thousands of dollars in legal fees as it proceeds forward, and now he has appeals, so the more complicated the case becomes, the more expensive it is for him. John and his family are like many families in America right now, sort of living on a financial edge with the economy. He sells cosmetics on eBay with his mom, that's how he makes his living. So if anybody wants to support John, please go to our website at cmmnj.org, click on the PayPal link for John Ray Wilson, and make a donation directly to the Wilson family. That would be the best way to support John, his family, and this case as it moves forward.
All right. Thanks, Chris Goldstein from Normal, New Jersey, and so many other organizations. We appreciate what you're doing there on the East Coast.
Thank you, Russ, and thanks for having me on today. I really do appreciate it. Have a great day there in Portland.
All right, we're turning the phone over now to Ken Wolski, the other co-founder of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey. And Ken, welcome back to the program.
No, thanks, Russ. So nice to be with you again.
Hey, I just wanted, you know, we've discussed the case here with John Wilson and the legal twists and turns, and I just wanted to get a reaction from you on the emotional side of this and how the family is holding up and your feelings about this case.
Well, you know, it's a very difficult time for the Wilson family, obviously. You know, not only is John suffering from the effects of multiple sclerosis, but he has this horrendous legal case where, you know, he's facing 20 years. And, you know, the stress of this legal case is just exacerbating his multiple sclerosis symptoms. I just found out today that John is half blind now in his right eye as a result of, you know, an exacerbation of his multiple sclerosis. And it's, you know, just a terrible ordeal for the family. And we're here today to support him and to show him how much support there is in the community. As you can hear there, you know, people have been showing their support all the time we've been out here.
In all the time that you've been working in medical marijuana law reform, how does this case stack up against the horror stories you've heard in the past?
It's one of the most egregious examples of the prosecution of patients in New Jersey that I'm aware of. You know, for this kid to, he's 36 compared to me, he's a kid, for him to be facing 20 years in prison for, trying to treat his illness, it's just a terrible example of social injustice. And, you know, it really shocks our conscience here and just outrages us and our community. And that's why we're out here today. For 3 hours marching in the hot sun and demonstrating out here, and it really is a very warm day here in New Jersey. Patients out here too, we have patients in wheelchairs and other sick people too who just, you know, are just ignoring their own problems and coming out here to show support for John Wilson.
Yeah, I heard the honks of people driving by, you know, honking in support, I imagine, and you've got a picket line there of people. So I'm wondering, how has this, is this story getting enough coverage in the state? Are the people of New Jersey well aware of this case?
Well, you know, actually, we're quite pleased with the coverage that it's gotten so far. We've had a number of reporters here today from the Courier Post, from the Newark Star Ledger, and from local Somerset County papers. So, and we had a an article about our demonstration, our planned demonstration in the Star Ledger online just yesterday. So you know, it's certainly taking off in the media community too. We think that there's going to be some spots on the New Jersey Network News, and yes, you know, we're pleased that it's getting the coverage that it is, because it's just such an outrageous situation. I mean, people who hear about it are just shocked to find out that you know, not only is this kid facing 20 years in jail for trying to treat his illness, for which there is no cure, but he can't even mention that he has multiple sclerosis at the trial. You know, it's just an outrage.
Yeah, it is an outrageous case. And like I've said before, we'll keep an eye on this case and keep everyone informed on it. I want to thank you so much, Ken, and give my thanks also to Jim and Chris for joining us here on the Stash today. Appreciate everything you guys are doing.
We certainly appreciate your keeping us informed, and thanks for sharing this with the national audience too, Russ. We really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with the reminder that we are 1 week away from the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest that takes place Friday, August 28th at El Jefe's here in Portland, Oregon. I'm being sponsored by Herb Age Designs, which has decided that it would be funny to watch me eat blazing hot buffalo wings. And a lot of you stashers out there have gotten involved by pledging per wing to donate to the Normal Show Live. And I've gotten a lot of donations. I want to thank everyone for making those pledges. I've pledged to try to make it to 20 wings. I'm only going to hold you to 20, so if I eat more than that, you only got to pay for 20. And we're taking donations from 25 cents a wing all the way up to one stasher who pledged $21 per wing. If I eat all 20, that'll make $420. So very, very clever there. You can still get your pledge in. Just send me an email at stash@normal.org. And as we've been doing to prepare for Normal Show Live, here's another one of the voiceovers we'll be using on the show. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder, bomb smoker. So much for that amotivational syndrome. You're listening to Normal Show Live.